and welcome along to another episode of From the Horse's Mouth, a new voice you might recognize. My name is Tom Nugent. I'm here to replace, nay, just imitate, not replace, merely substitute in for the great PK this week. And I'm joined by two of the great minds in the game, Rory Delargy and Matt Chapman. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining me. How are things?
Tom, it's fantastic to hear your voice again. The last time I saw you, you were throwing a custard pie in my face, and that's not a euphemism for anyone who slightly has a strange way of looking at things. It was literally a custard pie. So, and there wasn't just one either. So it's great to see you. And, you know, you look as though you've filled out well.
Yeah, summer pastures, Matt, they're treating me kindly, but it's as ever, delighted to have you once again boosting my confidence. We're going to rattle through a couple of the races on ITV this weekend. Hard to believe summer slipping by as we head into July, and six races, just the six meetings, I should say, across the UK on Saturday, but of course highlighted by the action at Sandown featuring the Coral Eclipse. And we're going to kick things off with the 150 at Sandown on Saturday. It is the Coral Charge Group 3 over 5 furlongs. Mitabahi is the 3-1 favourite alongside Rassel at 9-2 Equilateral, 7-1 Nymphadora alongside Tippy Toes, 8-1 Method and 10-1 and bigger the rest at Rory Delargy. Let's begin with you.
I think I'm going to start with a fairly boring one here, to be honest. Mitabahi is a course and distance winner, beat a good yardstick and live in the dream here last time out in a similar sort of race, the Coral Scurry Stakes. He's got stall one, which I don't think is as big an advantage as it used to be here and is sometimes overplayed. But I don't think Mr. Hickey has overdone that in the market as it stands. I thought Mitabahi would be a little bit shorter than he is. Given that he's an upwardly mobile three-year-old against largely more exposed horses. And I thought he would take plenty of beating. I do quite like Nymphadora as a performer as well. I was keen on her at a big price at Royal Ascot, and she ran really well to be second in the Palace of Holyrood House handicap. This is a slightly stiffer task for her. And stall eight might just be a little bit tricky. You can win from wide out over 5 furlongs at Sandown these days. It used to be you had to be very close to the rail or you had no chance. And she's got the speed to take a good position. But I think Mitabahi just has a little bit more in his favour. And there's not enough between them at the prices to try to be clever with value. I think Mitabahi should go very close here.
Very good. Mitabahi for Rory Delargy. Matthew?
We got the dead eight. And the outside of this field is not going to be a big price. So it kind of tells you all you need to know. I mean, the outside of the field probably is going to be about 10, 11 to 1. So basically, anything could happen here. The horse that's not sexy, who I'm going to tip up, if it edges towards 5 and 6 to 1, we can play each way, is Equilateral. I mean, he's a bit like Cardem, Equilateral. Like, you don't really ever want to tip him or back him, but you know he's going to pop up from time to time. But he was very good in Maidan over the winter. He returned with a fifth in the King's Stand behind Nature Strip, which you could almost argue is the best single piece of form in the race. If they go hard, and that is a slight debate, but if they went hard, he will certainly travel well off a pace and he can finish off. So he's not a sexy horse in any way, and I don't expect there to be an avalanche of cash for Equilateral, but he does have plenty of ability. In fact, probably on ratings, he's just about the joint top-rated horse with Rassel. And that was a really good run in the King Stand. So look, as I say, he's not exciting. He's not going to get me up early in the morning, but I'm going to go Equilateral to win if he's sort of probably 4-1, 9-2. But we can play him each way if he does edge out to 11-2, 6-1.
Lovely stuff. Onwards we go. 2:25 Sandown on Saturday is the Coral Challenge handicap over a mile. Sinjari is the current 2-1 favourite with Paddy Power. Lion Tower next in at 5-1. 6-1 Check and Challenge. Uzo is 9s and it's 10-1 and bigger the rest. Matt, a lot of these seasoned campaigners at a relatively kind of high quality level, but would the 3-year-old provide some interesting angle for a bit of improvement maybe?
I tell you what, Tom, for you, you've summed that up really well, I think, in some ways. But I don't want to back Sinjari at 2-1. I just don't. He's not a sexy enough horse for me to go in at those kind of odds. I did something pretty magnificent at Royal Ascot. I managed to pick a horse who finished 29th of 29 in the race that it was in, which as tipping goes, I think is fairly unprecedented. The horse was Uzo, and he ran an absolute shocker over 7 furlongs. Now, he usually runs over a mile, so maybe in a Royal Ascot handicap, he just got completely taken off his feet because over 7 there, they go almost 6 furlong pace in the early stages. But he ran terribly. On paper, you could easily argue he'd prefer softer ground, but he does have a fourth in the 2021 Royal Hunt Cup behind Real World on good to firm ground. So the ground probably isn't an absolutely major issue. And I'm going to go in again each way for the Osborne, Safi and Jamie. He's got obviously absolutely no chance on that last time out run, but the BHA handicapper hasn't actually dropped him at all for the effort, suggesting that the handicappers have just ignored that run. And I will risk Uzo each way, has some Sandown form, and I imagine he'll be about 10, 12, 14 to 1. Uzo each way for me. I might need some Uzo by then.
Very good. Rory, what do you like here?
Yeah, I'm intrigued at the match sticking with Uzo because I know he was reasonably keen going into Royal Ascot after the horse had finished 2nd over this course in distance. I think sticking the headgear on him was probably the mistake at Ascot. He was far too free, and I can see him bouncing back. And again, you tend to look for a bit of value in this race. Matt's touched on Sinjari. He is definitely the horse to beat in this race, but he's a horse who hasn't actually won a race for quite a while. And whether you want to back him at really short odds, I don't know. His last win came in 2020. So to be backing a horse at this level of competition who's 2 years without a win is asking a little bit. But he did shape really well in the Hunt Cup. He generally raced over a mile and a quarter for William Haggis, but he ran very well back at a mile on his reappearance for the Charltons. And I thought he was really well drawn in the Royal Hunt Cup, but as it was, the jockeys didn't want to go anywhere near the stands rail. He was drawn in stall 33, and he did very well to be as close as he was in the finish in 5th. As I said, that's the best form in the race for me. It's just a question of whether you want to back Sinjari in a slightly different race, a turning mile at a short price. I don't really, but I do respect his chances. The one that I would be with at a big price here, slightly on the same lines as Matt with Uzo, if you can ignore one bad run that you could excuses for, Mostowa for Heather Mayne, drawn out in stall 10. He's a horse who's got form over course and distance. A stiff mile suits him really well. He will be a big price because he ran poorly at York last time out, but he was very badly drawn that day. I can see him bouncing back to form. His previous effort was a very solid 2nd at Hamilton. He does often compete in a slightly lower grade race than this, but he's competitive off his mark. And I think he can hit the frame. I don't think he's quite good enough to win this, but I think you'll be getting a pretty big double figure price about him. And if he runs on to finish 3rd, that will pay you a little bit better than back in the favourite. And there's not a huge amount of pace in this race. He might be able to pop out from stall 10 and dictate. And if he does that under Tyler Hurd, that gives him a decent chance. I don't think there's going to be much rain at Sandown. We haven't really touched on that so far. There's lots of rain around the country at the moment. Haydock's been hit overnight. But the impression I get is that the going isn't going to get much worse at Sandown. So there's not a great chance of them coming up the stand side. But even so, 10 is not a bad draw for this mile at Sandown, given historic results. And I thought Mostowa was overpriced.
Very good. The outsider of the field at the time of recording with Paddy Power, 20-1 Mostowa for Rory De Largy in the 2:25 at Sandown on Saturday. The next race at Sandown on Saturday is 3:00. It's the Coral Distaff over a mile. Royal Ascot winning form here. Heredia, the winner of the Sandringham at Royal Ascot, is the favourite for Sean Levy and Richard Hannon at 11-8. Grand Dam is 11-4. 5-1 Oscula. Fast Attack is 6-1. And it's 16-1 and Bigger the Rest. Rory, will start with you here. What do you like?
I think it's pretty hard to oppose Heredia. She's been very progressive in her 4 starts to date. This is a different test than the one she met in the Sandringham at Royal Ascot last time. And obviously that's a very strongly run 28 runner handicap. But that was her first run at a mile and she improved a chunk for it. She travelled like the winner from the start. She was very, very heavily backed in the 5 minutes before the off, as if a big run was expected. And as I said, she travelled really strongly and won that with a fair bit in hand. I thought the winning margin was a length, which was full value for that. It's always a very strong handicap, because obviously there's the possibility of black type for the fillies in that listed race as well. So she appears to be head and shoulders above these in form. You're always slightly worried about backing a filly in different circumstances. Sandown, although it's a stiff enough mile, it's not that similar to Ascot. This could be a tactical race, which would ask questions over it, because she tends to be held up on the rear in her races. And there is the vague possibility that something like Oscula or maybe Fast Attack can bounce out, dictate a steady pace, and maybe nick it from the front. But on all known form, and on the way she's progressing, Heredia does look like she's a standout here, and I'm loath to oppose her, even at short odds.
Very good. Matthew?
Yeah, I haven't got much more to add to what Rory said, to be quite honest. I did interview Richard Hannon. We could call him Junior if you like. Obviously, he's been the trainer now for a long time at Windsor the other day on Sky, and talked to him about this horse. And I thought Sean Levy gave the horse a beautiful ride at Ascot, but Richard joked that the old man had said he was very lucky. So maybe Heredia won't be ridden quite so far off the pace. The thing I think could get her beat is just trouble in running. If she's trying to come from last to first, it's not always, even in a not massive field, the easiest thing to do. But as Rory has said, you know, she's unbeaten. She's just about the best of these already, with the prospect of more to come. So I can't really see what's not to like. And I'm a bit surprised she's not even perhaps a bit shorter in the betting. Perhaps Grand Dame being in there, being a table horse, even though the miss is sort of side of the tables, maybe that will hold the market up. But from what we've seen, Heredia just looks a very progressive filly, and the kind of filly that might end up in a Group 1 at Newmarket later on in the season, sort of restricted to her sex.
Very good. It looks like a straightforward thing at the 3 o'clock then. Onwards we go to the highlight of Saturday at 3:35 at Sandown. It is the Coral Eclipse. A select field of six here, but five of those six are already Group 1 winners. Vidani, the French horse, 6-4 favourite. Native Trail, 100-30, 7-2 Bay Bridge, 7-1 Mishriff, Alan Kerr is 8, and 20-1 Good Old Lord North. Matt, we'll start with you for the Coral Eclipse. What do you like?
Okay, so let's just quickly run all three, all six, fairly quickly, in my opinion. I think Lord North is massively overpriced, but I can't really see him getting a strong pace. Well, the pace is the absolute crucial thing in this race. I'm sure Rory will touch on that in a moment. He's much more of a sort of analyst than me in many ways, but I'm sure pace is the key. With Lord North, the problem for me, for a horse who tends to have a turn of foot, is lack of pace. Alan Kerr, if you want to back one at a price, I don't think would be the worst selection from the point of view. I can't think they can do anything but go to the front. And when you're dictating in a small field, there's always a chance of an upset. So I wouldn't put anyone off Alan Kerr. The gut feeling, of course, is that the ground won't be soft enough for him to produce his best. But he does have form on decent enough ground, and he could just steal it from the front. Mishriff, obviously, when he ran in Saudi, in Riyadh, you just have to forget that run. But it's still going to be a massive run for Mishriff, I think, to win this on his comeback since then. Baybridge, I've never been convinced that he's quite as good as people think he should be. I feel there's been a bit of cliche about just because he had a load of ones, he's a typical Sir Michael Stout improver. I'm not sure he is. He might be, but I'm not sure. And you have to have a whole reason to take a horse on. Native Trail, obviously, there's a question mark about his stamina. Running style, I think, would strongly suggest a mile and a quarter will be no problem. And I know my ITV colleague, Jason Weaver, wanted him to be in the Derby over a mile and a half, let alone a mile and a quarter. So obviously he can win. But for me, the market leader is the most likely winner because he's lightly raced. He produced easily his best performance last time. Now, people can say, well, I'd like to see him go and do it again. But because he's lightly raced, I don't see any reason not to believe the French Derby form. The third in that, I really like the third, the Breeders' Cup winner who was back in third for Godolphin Modern Games. So I like the form of the race, even though El Bodegon perhaps isn't the most sturdy, but he was a really good two-year-old El Bodegon and has the form with Stone Age back in the juvenile days. So my reading of the race is Alan Kerr can go to the front. I can see Vedaney sitting second. And then with the weight differential and the fact he's improving anyway, I expect Vedaney to take it up and lead close home. So I'm all over the French Raider, despite the fact that Rouget has never had a runner at Sandown before, despite the fact the current Aga Khan has never won this race before. I'm going Vedaney. That was quite a long chat, wasn't it, Tom, to get to the favourite?
For someone who described themselves as not an analyst, I nearly had to cut you off there. You were getting so deep into the whole picture. You're obviously also on mention bonuses there. You've managed to plug ITV and Sky there, so well done.
I've just set it up for Rory to knock me down, but that's my reading of the race. I may, of course, be wrong.
Rory, is he wrong?
Well, Matt makes the really important point here that you'd love to see a good pace in this. A few days ago, it looked like we were in for potentially an absolute classic of an eclipse. The field is cut up. It's cut up to good horses, but a few of these would be dependent on a good pace to show their best form. And the question you're left with, A, is who's going to make the running in the first place? And whether they're going to set a steady pace, or whether Tom Marcon maybe is going to set off on a Lenker and try to wind it up a little bit, knowing he stays a little bit further than this. But he can be a little bit free. He was at Maidan over a mile and a half in his penultimate start. So I don't see Tom wanting to make too much use of a Lenker. That might be a little bit of a question for Bay Bridge, because he was caught out by a steady pace at Royal Ascot, despite the fact he almost certainly ran to the same form as when winning here on his previous start. It'd be a negative for Lord North. It'd be a negative for Native Trail, who is a fascinating contender up to mile and a quarter, but what he doesn't do is quicken immediately. He needs to be asked, and then he lengthens, and he's impressive when he does that, but it takes a little bit of time for him to hit top gear. And although he might improve a step up to mile and a quarter, I think if this turns messy and becomes a sprint, it probably counts against Native Trail. And I think Matt's right. The horse who's probably best equipped to quicken off
Go
a
on,
slow
Rory.
Pace is
Vedaney. Go on, Rory. Go on, Rory.
And my only concern with him is he might be on much faster ground than he's raced on before. It's good to soft when he won the French Derby last time out. His previous run was on good. So he's not a mudlark by any means, but it might be quite quick at Sandown, depending on whether they're going to throw any more water on the track. If it's good, I'd have no problem with that. And I think he ends up being best suited to the race. If this was going to be run at a really strong pace, I've been kind of put my neck on the line and say that I trust Bay Bridge to step up. But we saw that he was vulnerable in this sort of scenario at Ascot. So backing him in what could be a similar scenario at Sandown could be, making the same mistake twice. So it's not the easiest race to punt on because of questions about how strong the pace will be, but it's probably not going to be strong. And we're more likely, the likeliest leader, as we said, is a Lenker. Although you never know in a situation like this where there's no obvious front runner that someone decides that they're going to change tactics completely, and that can throw out the cat among the pigeons completely. But as it stands, Vedaney is the one who makes the most appeal. It wouldn't be max bet material. You sometimes feel that you've got to have your biggest bet of the weekend and the best race of the weekend, but sometimes the setup of the race doesn't suit that, and you've got to be fairly careful. But I'm in agreement with Matt. I think Vedaney is the one who's got least questions to answer.
Harmony between De Largy and Chapman, the sweetest muse of all. On we go up to Haydock. That concludes our Sandown preview. We go up to Haydock. Three races there, the first of which we're going to look at is at 2:05, simply titled the Bet365 Handicap over a mile and six. Sea King is the 3-1 favourite. Giavoletto is 7-1, 8-1 duty bound. Nathaniel Green is also eights alongside Percy Jones, and it's 10-1 and bigger the rest. Rory, we'll let you unpick this tricky race.
Well, I've had one bet anti-post on this weekend's action, and that was in this race, so I should cover that first. I backed Percy Jones with Paddy Power earlier in the week. There were 28-1 about him at the time. He's not that price now, is he?
No, he's not.
He'll be a little skinnier than that. You can remind me what
eight
that
to
is.
One.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those scenarios. The price was clearly wrong to me. I didn't have an enormously strong opinion about the race, but there was a discussion going on about quite big prices being offered on Double Cherry, who was the winner at Goodwood last time out. Double Cherry beats Percy Jones by three lengths there There's a turnaround of the way. Percy Jones didn't get the clearest of runs through. And I thought, if you make the argument that the Double Cherry was overpriced, by definition, you have to say that Percy Jones was as well. I missed the price on Double Cherry, but I noticed that that while Paddy cut the price on one of them, they didn't cut the price on the other one, and the two of them tie together on that form line. So I thought Percy Jones at a big price was interesting. At the current odds, I'd be slightly wary. I know Huey Morrison had a really impressive winner at Pontefract during the week, but I think you'll find that horse is probably 3 stone ahead of his mark. Time will show down the line. And aside from that, there have been quite a few moderate performances from horses in the Morrison yard. Wagga Wagga, as I said, absolutely bolted up by 7.5 lengths at Pontefract. But every other runner that Huey's had in the last week has been unplaced. And that's a concern. And some of them have been beaten fair distances as well. So I'm not enormously confident about my tenner each way on Percy Jones as it stands. And I'm going to take a chance here on one that's at a bigger price on the day, because it's a horse I made a case for last time. I was working with Ruby that day, and he pointed out to me, again, stable form, and said, would you not be worried about this based on this form of the yard? I said, I wasn't. The two horses that were running from the yard that day backfired. But the stable's in better form now. The stable in question is Rafe Beckett, who did struggle a little bit. He had the runner-up in the 1,000 Guineas, and then had quite a barren spell after that. Speycaster was the horse I liked at York. He shaped really well in a mile and a quarter handicap at Nottingham on his return. That was strong form for the track. I thought he would step up on that at York. He didn't look very comfortable on the ground. He didn't look in particularly good shape pre-race. He was a negative in the paddock, and he disappointed. He's been gelded since then, and the yard are in much better form. Now, you can't make a particularly strong case for him on form based on that effort. All you can say is that he shaped well, and he shaped like he would improve for a step up and trip on his return at Nottingham. I'm happy to ignore the last run. Hope that a bit of time and a gelding operation have done him the world of good. Softer ground should suit him as well. It was good to soft at Nottingham. So I'd give Speycaster a chance of hitting the frame here at a biggish price. I'd want to be getting value in a race like this. These 3-year-old handicaps tend to be very, very hard to read. Lots of chances, lots of horses improving more than you'd expect them to, or indeed not improving as much as you would expect them to. And they can throw up the occasional funny result as well. This has been a pretty good race for punters in recent years, in fairness, but I don't find 3-year-old handicaps easy to deal with most of the time. I prefer my form to be exposed for there to be no surprises. There's always the potential for surprises in races like this, so I'd always look for horses at bigger prices and play smaller. And for that reason, as I said, I've had the small bet in Percy Jones during the week, and I will have a saver on Speycaster at equally big prices, I hope.
Very, very good. Matt, what do you like here?
You have a way, don't you, Tom, with those little very, very good, as if you've popped out and been to the shops and back and had a cup of tea, and then you kind of say, yeah, that was really good, but I'm half asleep.
No, well, he's already snaffled the value on Percy Jones. The price is gone on Double Cherry. And I was never much of an angler, so I'm not going to back Speycaster.
This is the problem with Rory, is he always sorts himself out first. But
that's a scandalous and scurrilous remark.
I looked at this race a long time, and I'm quite pleased that Rory has already gone to town on it, because I was really usually in these races, you can pick out a horse that instantly is gagging for the extra trip or going a bit further. And I went through all of them, and I was really struggling to find any horse that I thought, you know what, that horse is going to improve for the extra distance. Most of these have been running over a mile, a quarter mile and a half sort of thing. I couldn't really find it. I mean, the Prescott horse obviously might well do so, but he did go up £9 for his last win, which was quite a bit. He's the obvious improver. Anyway, to cut a long story short, because I did find this a bit of a puzzle, I ended up with the Queen's Duty Bound, who ran over this distance, is one of the few to have been over the distance and won last time, had started off at the right end of the handicap ratings, i.e. was only rated 73, went up £5 for the win at Sandown, so he's only up to 78 here. And I'm hoping that Duty Bound might still have a bit more to come over this trip against this lot. But on this race, I mean, you could say this about every race, but I would listen to Rory perhaps more than me, because I found this a little bit more confusing than I wanted it to be. But I'll go duty bound in the hope Her Majesty as a winner. Nice to have a queen for your country, Tom.
You'd never be confused, Matt, would you? You'd never be confused.
So the 248 Haydock next up.
248 Haydock is over a mile and a half. It's the Bet365 Lancashire Oaks Group 2. Free Wind is the 15-8 favourite with Paddy Power. Shada 7-2, 5-1. Sila Rosa. Gawida is 6-1, 8-1, and Bigger the Rest. Matt, you can kick us off here. Seems you're never confused. Away you go.
I'm not a great fan of these fillies races. I struggle with them. I'm not always sure the form is upheld that much. I find the horses a little bit hard to weigh up. Anyway, the ground obviously is testing for a start at Haydock. And I'm not sure that's up a Shada's absolute street or not. But I came down on a Shada without really any confidence. She was absolutely horrible first time out this season. But she is a Group 1 winner. And if that just blew the cobwebs away at Newbury, then I've little doubt she's the best or the most talented horse in this race. So I'm going to go with Shada, but I'm happy to hear Rory's expert analysis, because none of these got me that jiggy.
Rory, away you go. Yeah, does anything get you jiggy, quote unquote?
Well, in terms of a Shada, I think she wants a bit of dig in the ground. She does handle quick ground, but she raced on very, very fast ground in the Ribblesdale last season and finished second. And then she just didn't let herself down at all at York on her next start in the Yorkshire Oaks. And I think sometimes when horses run on very fast ground for the first time, they will handle it, but they'll remember it afterwards. And she's disappointed twice now on quick ground since running that good race in the Ribblesdale. Whereas when she's raced on softer ground, she's shown her form. She won the Filly and Mare turf at, I said the Filly and Mare turf, the British equivalent, the British Champions Fillies and Mares Stakes at Ascot on good to soft ground. She won the Fillies trial at Newbury last spring on soft ground as well. So I think the ground will be absolutely fine for her. And of course, there's been a lot of rain at Haydock coming into today, but it's such a funny track that one sunny day could see the ground almost on the fast side again. So I'm mentally prepared for soft ground, but I've got to bear in mind that you never really know what you're going to get at Haydock. But yeah, she'll be, I think if Matt's worried about the ground, I wouldn't be. It wouldn't be my major concern with the Shada, and I would just about make her favourite for this race as well. But I'm going to take a chance on the rank outsider again. I do like a rank outsider. Nell Quickly will definitely handle soft ground. She's a winner twice on soft last season at Salisbury and at Newmarket. Now, she's been working her way up through handicaps, so she ends up being the lowest rated of these. But every time she's given a test, she passes it. I thought she was a bit unlucky the way things panned out when she was third to Sila Rosa in the Pinnacle here last time out. It was a slow pace. That doesn't really suit her. She finds loads for pressure, and she wants a fair stamina test. And she just got done for a turn of foot there, but she plugged on really gamely on ground that was quick enough for her. It'll, whatever the ground is this weekend, it'll be softer than it was last time. And I think Nell Quickly, hopefully with a bit more pace in the race as well, because Kawid is going to want to go on. Sila Rosa did at a modest pace last time. Free Wind has been ridden forwardly in most of her races as well. So I'm hoping it's not going to be a crawl. And if it's a well-run race, then I think Nell Quickly can prove herself to be better than her handicap mark. Now, she does need to get involved here, but just watch a replay of some of her races last season. She's got a tremendous attitude. She's progressing all the time. Dennis Coakley, who trains her, is in really good form at the moment as well. He only has a smallish yard, Dennis, but his horses are absolutely flying. Two of his last three runners have been winners. And I think Nell Quickly will make the frame here at a big price.
Lovely stuff. 16-1 Nell Quickly with Paddy Power at the time of recording.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
The final race we're going to look at for the weekend is the 3:15 at Haydock on Saturday. It's the Old Newton Cup. Five places here with Paddy Power to give you a hand. 6-4 favourite is Gassy for Kieran Fallon and William Haggis. 7-1 Trawlerman. Get Shirty is 10s alongside Liverpool Knight. 12-1 Brentford Hope and Something Enticing. 4-1 and Bigger the Rest. I remember when Brentford Hope was that, am I mistaken to think that was a one-time kind of derby hopeful?
Yeah, bolted up on us at Newmarket as a two-year-old on soft ground over a mile and a quarter, I think. And the world looked his oyster. He just needs really soft ground, which he might get here and he might not get. And if it, you know, the softer it gets, the more interesting Brentford Hope becomes. But that's, well, we'll see what the, I don't think it's going to get hooked deep, but you, as I said, you just never know. Haydock tends to attract strange weather and it tends to produce odd going. So you never want to predict 2 days in advance what it's going to be like. It may well be that the low numbers dominate here. You know, a lot of the fancied horses are drawn low and all the pace that there is in the race seems to come from the low numbers as well. So it may well be this sort of splits in two. And you get a sort of phalanx of horses drawn close to the rail, getting out in front, dominating, and nothing from behind gets involved, which would make Garcia look a decent bet because he's drawn a stall five. He's got the likes of Torcello inside him to go forward to chase. It probably sets up perfectly for him, but he's a terrible price, isn't he? I struggle to back any horse in any competitive handicap at that kind of price. We talked about him early in the season. You know, he looked to be set up for that that handicap at York's May meeting. He did it in night. He was sent off 6-4 favourite there. He's been very, very short prices for all his wins to date. Clearly handles soft ground very well. And, you know, he's the first horse your eye lands on there. But he is £7 higher than he was at York. None of those horses he beat. I think one has won subsequently. None of them won next time out. I think Dear Old Dark Jedi, who was last but one, has won a race since. But that fundamentally was nowhere near as strong a race as the race he's in here. And while he is the likeliest winner, you've got to get a little bit of value price-wise, and his current price is just not appealing. So there's two that I would put up against him. I've said the low numbers might have it. I hope that's not the case because I like a couple who are... Well, I like one that's drawn a bit wide, who makes a lot of appeal to me, and that's Liverpool Knight. He would be my main selection in the race. He's drawn in stall 13, but his run style is to come from off the pace. He was very, very impressive. I think on his final start for Alan King, or his penultimate start for Alan King, when winning at Wolverhampton over a mile and six, but he showed a lot of speed that day for the trip. He clearly stays a mile and six, but I thought his main asset there was a turn of foot at the end of his races. And he had no problem dropping back to the extended mile three at Windsor on his debut for Kevin DeFoy at Windsor early in the month. I thought he won that impressively, won by 3.25 lengths in a handicap from Group One Par, despite the fact that, again, that race wasn't run at a particularly strong gallop. They also went to the far rail in the straight. He wasn't best positioned, I didn't think, as that sprint began, but he still won it easily. He's £6 higher for that, but I think he seems to be going the right way. I think his new trainer's got the right idea that he's got the speed for a mile and a half, and there are plenty of opportunities for him. Maybe they might be thinking about the Ebor down the line, but I don't think he'll have any problem with this trip at all based on how he ran at Windsor last time out. He also has got no problem on softish ground, and I think he's got a decent chance. At a much bigger price, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a big run from Lover's Golden for Mark and Charlie Johnson, and with John Egan riding. He gets cheek pieces for the first time, which is very unusual for Mark Johnson. To the best of looking back through the records, Mark Johnson's used cheek pieces, getting horses cheek pieces for the first time, only about 30 times in 25 years. He tends to go straight for blinkers or a visor if he's going to put headgear in his horses. But he puts cheek pieces on Lover's Golden here. He's hard to win with these days, but he's got lots of solid placed form to his name. And although most of his form of late has come on good and quicker ground, Arguably, his best performances have come with a bit of dig. He was winner on good soft ground at Chester on his reappearance last season. He won on softish ground at Ripon as well. So when he's raced on ground that's sort of good to soft or soft, he's actually run very well. He has flopped on heavy ground in the past, but I don't think it'll be heavy here. I think good to soft is a fair possibility. As I said, he's one of those horses who you wouldn't trust implicitly if he was a 6-4 favorite for a class 4 handicap, but you'd be inclined to give him half a chance at 40-1 in a race like this. He's got the run style that will suit it. He can go to the front. He can come from off the pace and win, but he can make the running. And that can be a big advantage at Haydock, where you tend to get plenty of trouble in running. And again, you look through previous results of this race and you find, you know, you got Mark Johnson horses popping up in these big handicaps at biggish prices as well. Notarized won in 2015, for example. Rainbow Rebel won in 2018, both at double figure prices. And Mark Johnson's always able to produce a horse like this to bounce back to its best in a big handicap. And I thought he was overpriced as well.
So a 40-1 tip dishes up the historical stat for Mark Johnson's use of cheek pieces over the last 25 years, and diligent listeners will have picked up the use of the word phalanx in everyday conversation. I mean, a remarkable analysis from Rory Delargy and a great command of the English language as ever. Now, over to you, Matt. Take it away. Top that.
Well, I can actually, because it was
wouldn't
fantastic.
Be like it. Wouldn't be like you to be able to top that. Go on.
It was fantastic. It was intelligent. It sounded great, but ultimately it was all a waste of time because Garcy is going to absolutely hack up here. And I'm going to differ with Rory here. I think this horse is a big price, which obviously if he gets beat, everyone can laugh at, which is always a good thing on a podcast. But look, Garcy was my banker at Royal Ascot. He obviously didn't run because the ground was too fast. Ironically, and slightly oddly, considering that he was considered the Haggis banker, Haggis then went and won the race with a Haggis banker. So it was a bit weird because it was the old Candle race where Candleford absolutely bolted in and Haggis then proceeded to tell us he'd laid it out for that. Well, that's not my understanding, because my understanding was Garcy was the horse who was meant to win that race. But he didn't run. He comes here. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind he's a group horse in the making. And even though, therefore, he's off a 101, I think it is here, I think he will just go and win. He loves the conditions. He stays strong. I've talked to Mark Wan numerous times about this horse, and every time he's just eulogized about the fact that this is a proper tool in the making. And you hark back to a horse like Adib, who ran in the Lincoln before becoming, you know, a horse on the world stage at the top level. I'm hoping Garcy is that horse again, because he's very likely raced for the same owner. And I will be bitterly disappointed if he doesn't make 6-4 look a big price after the old Newton Cup, for all that most sane people would think the same as Rory and say to themselves, 6-4 in an old Newton Cup, don't be silly. I think I can find a little novice hurdler with a better claim than that. And I completely understand that. I just think in this case, we will see that Garcy will just hack all over them. So I am going with a very short price favourite as a good thing, and you can rest assured abuse will only follow if it doesn't win.
Water off a duck's back. Abuse never bothered now, you yes. ever in a day in your life, Matt. Right, that concludes our analysis of the races. We are now looking for your nap, your best bet of the weekend, the thing that absolutely cannot be beaten. Matt, I think I assume we know what it's going to be.
Well, I think there are horses on Saturday that could have claims for that. I think Heredia was definitely a possibility. I'm talking at a slightly shorter price. Obviously, you can have a big price each way nap or something. I wouldn't put people off Verdani, although I think Verdani has a few more questions to ask than the odds suggest. But yes, obviously, the nap is meant to be a horse that will just go and win, and we all know that will be Garcy, I hope.
Rory?
I'm I'm more of a man that your nap can be in each way. Nap.
You should have
well.
Just left it's out. Well, you should have just said you're more of a man.
That's a whole different podcast.
It's tempting to go straight against Matt here, but I take his point. Gassi's entries later in the year are in the Princess of Wales Stakes at Newmarket and in the Irish St Leger, and clearly, you know, William Haggis thinks he's a group horse and if he is, he ought to be winning, but it's still anathema to me to be backing one at that kind of price in a handicap. I'll go for Nell Quickly in the Lancashire Oaks. Again, very much an each way bet there. I just think she'll run considerably better than her official rating suggests, and she will get in the money there. And that's good enough for me if she's 16-1 hitting third. That's more appealing than backing a 64 shot for me, but each to their own, of course.
Very good. That's it. That's all we've got time for. My thanks.
You've been excellent, Tom.
Well, look, I mean, when I'm in the presence of greatness, I just let you roll and I say very little, really.
Patrick will be worried at this stage because old Patrick, he clings on to this job, but he will be worried.
Don't worry, he will return recharged from his holidays and he'll take the mantle back again in very good. Oh, is that your Alexa in the background, is it?
Yeah, when I went Patrick, Alexa started mouthing off at me and giving me the history. I'm getting the history of Patrick's in the world. But shut it, Alexa.
Oh, very good. Right, well, that's all we've got time for. My thanks to Rory and Matt for joining me. Thanks to Paddy Power as well for having me along. I return to my dark room now, waiting for the phone to ring, but don't rest assured that Patrick Kennelly returns in the hot seat next week. We've got daily podcasts for the July meeting at Newmarket starting on Wednesday, so keep a lookout for that. But for now, I've been Tom Nugent, and that was another delightful installment of From the Horse's Mouth.